slaves regathered. When that is done, seal them with the lever.
I don't know where to place them, Jarlaxle admitted.
But you have them?
I do.
I'm not going with you, nor do I have the minions to spare to accompany you on your journey. I value them more than you value the fodder of your mercenary army. By Lolth, have that wretched psionic creature of yours carry this out. He walks through stone as easily as you move through water.
Kimuriel is unavailable, Jarlaxle explained.
Grumpf looked at him curiously, and soon enough a grin widened on the archmage's face.
You haven't told them, have you? He asked.
None of them.
Bregendierth is rarely in Luskan anymore, Jarlaxle replied. With the coming of the spell plague, there are so many other—
None of them! Grumpf roared,
seeming quite pleased with himself, and he snickered all the more. Jarlaxle could only sigh and take it, for the wise old mage had of course guessed the truth of it. Jarlaxle had not told Kimuriel, or any of his lieutenants of Bregendierth, had told no one, other than Grumpf himself, what had transpired in Gontalgrim.
Ah, your pride, Jarlaxle, the archmage scolded, and he kept laughing, but then stopped abruptly and added, But I'm still not going to Gontalgrim, nor do I have any soldiers to lend to you.
Jarlaxle didn't respond, but didn't turn to leave, even though Grumpf lowered his eyes to the glass and parchment and resumed his work. Only after many heartbeats did the archmage look up again.
What is it?
Jarlaxle reached into a pouch and produced the skull gem.
You brought that idiot back here?
Asked an annoyed Grumpf, who recognized the phylactery of Arklem Greith. Grumpf had interviewed the insane lich at great lengths over the course of many months, back when Jarlaxle had first come to him to try to garner information about the freed primordial and the diminishing magic of a host tower. The primordial awakens, Jarlaxle said, and he seemed back in control then, back on balance after Grumpf's biting observations. I'll not have it. Speak to Greith again, I pray you, and yes, I will pay you too. I would know the best way to find Gontalgrim again, and of how to proceed once I do.
I told you how to proceed. I need details, Grumpf, Jarlaxle insisted.
Where to place the bowls, for instance?
If those places weren't forever sealed with magma after the first rage of the primordial, Grumpf replied. And I know not where to place them in any case, nor will Greith. You can only hope that Gontalgrim itself shows you the way, if and when you find it once more.
Jarlaxle shrugged. And when you're finished, I would have you expel Arklem Greith from his phylactery into a separate place, that I might have control of the skull gem once more.
No.
No?
The magic of that gem is the only thing containing the lich.
Surely there are other phylacteries.
None that will hold him unless they're properly enchanted, and how that might be accomplished I do not know. When you bring me such a container, Jarlaxle, and I am convinced that it will hold him, I will place the spirit of Arklem Greith within it. Until then he remains in the skull gem. I hardly endeared him to me in those months of interrogation, and I'll not have a powerful lich seeking me out. I have played such a game before, and it was not a pleasant experience.
My efforts against the primordial will be more difficult without the gem, Jarlaxle explained. Undead, the ghosts of Gontalgrim, are thick about the place.
Then you have a problem, said Grumpf.
Jarlaxle stared at the indomitable wizard for a few heartbeats, then tossed him the skull gem that he could begin a new round of interrogation.
Attende, Grumpf said, and bring your gold.
Jarlaxle knew better than to ask that he take less time, so he bowed and took his leave. Grumpf smiled as he watched the mercenary depart. He placed the skull gem off to the side of his desk and went back to his scribing. Only for a moment, though. He sensed something curious about the gem. He stared at it for a few moments, then went to his bookcase to find the spell book containing the proper incantations. That very night, Grumpf had Jarlaxle back before him.
You have recently encountered a spirit of Gontalgrim, the archmage said to the surprised mercenary.
In Luskan, Jarlaxle confirmed. several sought out by my associate, the dwarf Atherogate, begging his help in saving what remains of their homeland.
Gromph Beanri held up the skull gem.
Your phylactery captured one of them.
Jarlaxle's eyes widened.
Or perhaps it was Greeth, reaching forth to grab a ghost to sate his loneliness.
Then Greeth is free?
An alarmed Jarlaxle asked.
But Gromph's grin dismissed that disturbing possibility before he even answered.
He's still in there, but so is the dwarf. Good fortune smiles upon you, as always. Help us, Gromph recited, in a very old dialect of dwarvish. Seat a king in the throne of Gontalgrim and harness the beast we beg.
What does that mean?
The archmage shrugged.
I can only relate to you that which the dwarf ghost told me. Many questions did I ask of him, and to each, a different variation of that same response.
Can the dwarf lead me back to Gontalgrim? Jarlaxle asked.
Even now that spirit is being consumed by Arklem Greeth, Gromph explained. He's feeding on it, as you or I might devour a Rothe steak. Arklem Greeth will never let it go, and I do not intend to go in there and fight him for the sake of a dwarf. You have the magical bowls, Gromph went on. You have the phials of pure water. You have been to Gontalgrim.
Will it work? Does enough residual magic of the host tower remain?
Gromph shrugged and was quite amused that he didn't know the answer to that particular question.
How lucky does my dear brother feel?
Dahlia rushed across the field and through the trees lining the most active section of the expanding dread ring. She took care to avoid the black necromantic ash itself, for though her brooch would protect her from its life-draining powers, she always felt as if her mere presence in a dread ring gave Zastam and his principal agents, including the hated Sylora, some power over her. Or maybe just insight into her, and either way, Dahlia was not pleased by the possibilities. She caught up to Sylora, standing on the edge of the ring, where its leeching powers touched some of the volcanic rock. Following Sylora's gaze, she noted a semi-translucent gray hand reaching out of the stone, clenching and unclenching, as if the dread ring was causing the ghost great distress.
Not a zombie, Dahlia remarked.
Is this a sign that the dread ring is strengthening? Can it bring forth wights and wraiths, specters and ghosts?
This one was a ghost before it arrived here, and the dread ring caught it and held it, Sylora explained. There are others, too. Ghosts, traveling in a pack, on a mission.
She looked directly at Dahlia and added, Dwarf ghosts.
From Gontalgrim, Dahlia reasoned.
Yes, apparently some of that complex survived the primordial's awakening. Close your eyes and open your mind and you will hear them.
Dahlia did as asked, and almost immediately felt the words, Help us, form in her mind.
They wish to be freed of the ring, she reasoned, but Sylora shook her head.
Again Dahlia focused on the telepathic keen of the dwarf spirits.
Help us, she heard again. The beast awakens. Help us.
Dahlia's eyes popped open wide, and she gawked at Sylora.
They come out of Gontalgrim with a warning of the reawakening primordial?
So it would appear, Sylora replied. And if they came here, then it is likely they've traveled to other places as well. Who will heed their call, I wonder?
None, Dahlia was quick to respond. And could any even find Gontalgrim again, should they care to try?
I know of one, perhaps two who could, Sylora replied.
Dahlia mulled that over for a few moments before nodding in agreement.
Some ghosts might have found their way to Luskin's Undercity. The host tower's tendrils lead there.
And what are we going to do about this?
The leading manner of Sylora's question left no doubt in Dahlia's mind as to the Thayan woman's intentions.
When the primordial awakens once again, its devastation will solidify our work, will create enough carnage to complete the dread ring, and that, in turn, will assure our victory over the Netherese. I'll not have that prevented or even delayed.
You wish me to go to Luskin to confront Jarlaxle and Atherogate?
Do you need to ask?
Do not underestimate those two,
Dahlia warned. They are formidable on their own, and Jarlaxle is not without powerful friends.
Take a dozen Ashmedai, a score if you think it necessary, Sylora replied. And or Cray.
The Lich would help.
Valyndra stays with me. She has almost fully regained her wits, but her power has not yet returned. She is not expendable.
That last line hit Dahlia like a bolt of lightning.
But I am.
Sylora laughed at her and turned her attention back to the dwarf ghost in the lava rock. Its face had appeared, a desperate grimace, and quite pleasing to the Thayan.
And so is Dorcray,
Dahlia pressed, only because she spotted the vampire not so far away and knew he'd heard the last exchange.
Dorcray is nimble enough to escape, should that be necessary,
Sylora answered without missing a beat. She always seemed one step ahead of Dahlia. The elf knew it was her own weakness, her own inability to recover from the humiliation of her failure at Gontalgrim that put her behind. Ever since she'd returned from that place, Dahlia had walked a less steady path. Where once she'd been aggressive, she had become reactive, and creatures like Sylora preyed on that indecisiveness.
Find them and learn if they're returning to Gontalgrim, Sylora ordered.
I doubt they're even in Luskan. It's been a decade.
Learn! Sylora snapped at her. If they are there, if they are returning to Gontalgrim, then stop them. If not, then learn if any others intend to take up the call of the dwarf ghosts. I should not have to explain this to you.
You don't, Dahlia replied, quietly but steadily. I understand what must be done.
Have you met this champion of Shadonclave who haunts Neverwinter Wood?
I have. He's human, but with something of the shade about him.
And you fought him?
Dahlia nodded, and an impatient Sylora motioned for her to elaborate.
He ran away, Dahlia lied. He's better at hiding than he is at fighting, though he's fine with the blade as well. I suspect his kills have come by surprise, mostly.
Sylora seemed a bit confused at that moment, glancing back over her shoulder into Neverwinter Wood.
I'll not likely find him again any time soon, Dahlia said.
She didn't want Sylora to reconsider her priorities, rather fancying the opportunity to be gone from that creature's side for some time at least, and also seeking no second encounter with the Grey.
Magic will flush him then, Sylora said,
and Dahlia did well to suppress her sigh of relief.
To Luskan with you in all haste, the Thayan sorceress went on. Find your old companions, and ensure that neither they nor anyone else slows the fury of our fiery pet.
Dahlia nodded and turned away.
Do not fail me in this, Sylora said after her,
her tone making clear the dire consequences of failure. Guinevar's ears flattened, and a low growl escaped the panther. She went into a crouch, her hind paws tamping down as she anticipated springing away. Drizzt nodded when he noted the pose, a confirmation of the same sensation that had just washed over him, like an otherworldly chill that had the hair on his neck and arms standing up. He sensed that something was about, and that perhaps it was from the Shadowfell, or at least Shade Enclave, but that was all he could guess. He moved slowly, not wanting to provoke an attack from some being or force he couldn't see. Hands on his scimitar hilts, he circled behind Guinevar, and holding all confidence that she would intercept any attack from the front or sides, the drow focused his attention the other way. He felt more at ease then, his senses telling him that whatever had passed nearby had moved off. He started to relax just a bit. Brunner's scream abruptly ended that respite. Drizzt sprinted to the shallow cave serving as their encampment, Guinevar close behind. By the time the drow reached the entrance, his scimitars were in hand, and he came up fast, ready to rush in and fight beside his friend. But Brunner wasn't fighting, far from it. He had his back up against the rear wall of the cave, his open hands out before him as if in surrender. He was breathing shallowly, gasping almost, and his face was locked somewhere between fear and...
And what?
Drizzt wondered.
Brunner?
He whispered. For though he too could sense somewhere in there, as he had outside, some chill and otherworldly presence, he saw nothing that could so terrify the dwarf.
Brunner didn't seem to even register his presence.
"Brunner," he asked again, more loudly. "They want me help," the dwarf explained. "And I cannot know what help they're wanting."
"They?
Don't ye see him, elf?" Brunner asked.
Drizzt squinted and peered more closely into the dimly lit cave.
"Ghosts," Brunner whispered. "Dwarf ghosts, asking me to help."
"Help with what?"
"I'm a bearded gnome, if I know."
Brunner's voice trailed off as he finished that thought, a confused look coming over him. Then his eyes widened so much, Drizzt thought they would pop out of their sockets.
"Elf," Brunner muttered,
as if he had to force the sound past a huge lump in his throat.
"Elf,"
he said again. And Drizzt noticed that he was leaning more heavily on the stone wall then, and recognized that if the wall hadn't been there, Brunner would have likely fallen over. Beside Drizzt, Guinevere growled and crouched again, clearly agitated. Brunner gasped for breath. Drizzt drew his blades and waded in, moving across the floor in practiced steps, each leaving him more ready to strike hard if need be. Brunner was mouthing something then, but he couldn't hear until he came right up near his friend.
"Gontalgrim," Brunner whispered.
Drizzt's eyes widened as well.
"What?" "Ghosts," Brunner sputtered. "Gontalgrim's ghosts. Asking for me help. Talking of a beast waking up once more."
Drizzt looked all around. He felt the chill, surely, but he saw and heard nothing.
"Ask them where," he told Brunner. "Perhaps they can guide us."
But Brunner began shaking his head, and he even stood up straight once more. And it wasn't until Drizzt saw that motion that he came to realize that the sensation had passed, that the ghosts were gone.
"Gontalgrim's ghosts," Brunner said,
his voice still very shaky.
"Did they tell you that, or are you guessing?" "They telled me, elf. It's real."
Those words struck Drizzt curiously, particularly coming from Brunner, who had led him on a merry chase for Gontalgrim for decades. But as he thought about it, he understood Brunner's surprise. For even when one believes strongly in something, the actual confirmation comes most often as a shock. Brunner looked away for a moment, staring off into the distance, then blinked his eyes as if some revelation had just come over him.
"The beast, elf," he said.
"What beast?"
"It's waking up. Again."
The emphasis on that last word was purposeful, Drizzt knew. But he still didn't quite get where Brunner might be going.
"And when it woke up last time, Neverwinter went away,"
Brunner clarified.
"The volcano?"
Drizzt asked. And Brunner kept nodding as if it was all coming clear to him.
"Aye, that's it. That's the beast."
"They told you that?"
"No," Brunner readily admitted, "but that's it."
"You can't know that."
But Brunner kept nodding.
"You feel the earth moving beneath your feet," he said. "You seen the mountain growing. It's waking up. The beast. The beast of Gontalgrim."
He looked Drizzt directly in the eye and nodded.
"And they're asking for me help, elf, and so they're to get it, or I'm a bearded gnome."
He nodded with even more determination, then rushed for his pack, fumbling with his maps.
"And now we're knowing the general area of the place. It's real, elf. Gontalgrim is real."
"So we're going to go there?"
Drizzt asked, and Brunner looked at him as if the answer was so obvious that Drizzt must have lost his mind to even ask.
"And stop a volcano?"
Drizzt explained.
Brunner's jaw hung open, and he stopped fumbling with his maps.
After all, how did one stop a volcano? Chapter 15. All roads lead to Luskin. With a pile of small, smooth stones beside him, Brunner went to work. One by one, he pulled the parchment maps from his pack, gently unrolling them and placing them on the mossy ground, securing each corner with a stone. He tried to categorize them by region first, searching for the ones that seemed to place Gontalgrim nearest the volcano that had erupted. The dwarf leaned back, kneeling, scratched his head repeatedly, and kept thinking about those ghosts that had come to him, pleading for his help. Gontalgrim. It was real. It still existed. Anyone looking at Brunner Battlehammer at that moment would have thought him 150 years younger, a feisty young dwarf eager for adventure. The years didn't bend his strong shoulders, and rarely had Brunner's eyes sparkled as they did just then, full of promise and hope. And indeed, someone was watching him. Someone with coal-black skin, someone lithe and swift and deadly. And it was not Drizzt. Brunner thought he'd suddenly been blinded. Everything just went black. He yelped and fell back, rolling down to his hip and lifting one arm defensively in front of him, while fumbling around on the ground with his other hand, trying to find his axe. A small pop sounded beside him, and a sharp jolt stung his arm. Then another and another, a series of tiny explosions disorienting him, biting at him. "Elf!" he yelled out, hoping Drizzt was near, and despite the discomfort, he continued furiously searching for his weapon. At last he grabbed it, and only then, the popping sounds continuing, did he also notice the sound of parchment rustling. "Elf!" he yelled again, and realizing his error in falling backward, the dwarf scrambled the other way. He came out of the strange globe of impenetrable darkness in short order, crawling, stumbling onto the mossy patch where he'd placed the maps. They were gone. The horrified dwarf looked to the forest and the rustling brush. He scrambled up to his feet and flung himself forward in pursuit, but as soon as he caught a glimpse of the thief, his heart sank and his legs slowed. It was a dark elf and one he couldn't hope to catch. "Elf!" he screamed at the top of his lungs, and he took up the chase anyway, trying at least to keep in sight of the fleeing drow. "Call your damned cat, elf!" Brunner yelled. "Call your cat!" He continued the chase over a ridge and down into a tree-filled dell, and he kept on running right up the far ridge, though he had lost all sight of the thief. Over that ridge, the underbrush was light, the field of view clear, but the thief was nowhere to be seen. Brunner skidded to a stop, hopping about, craning his stocky neck, but with the growing realization that he had lost his treasured maps. Gasping for breath, he ran back the way he'd come, veering to the right, the southeast, hoping against hope that he could make that ridge and catch sight of the thief once more. He didn't. Brunner howled for Drizzt again, repeatedly, as he ran to the western ridge, then back to the north and to the east, and finally to the west once more. Some time later, Brunner caught a sign of movement to one side of his camp. He took up his axe, hoping the thief had returned. But the dark form showed herself more clearly. Guinevar bounded up to him, her ears flattened, her lips curled back.
"Find him, cat," Brunner implored her. "A damned drow elf stole me maps."
Guinevar's ears came up, and she turned her head left and right, taking in the wider view.
"Go, go," the dwarf yelled at her, and with a roar that reverberated all around them, Guinevar leaped away straight to the west.
Moments later, with Brunner nodding enthusiastically at the departing panther, Drizzt rushed up beside him, scimitars in hand.
"An elf took me maps!" Brunner cried at him. "Drow elf!"
"Where did he run?" The dwarf glanced all around, but threw his axe down, sticking it into the ground and helplessly lifted his empty, trembling hands.
"Which way?" Drizzt prompted.
Brunner waved his hands and head in despair.
"Where were you when he struck?" Drizzt asked.
And for a moment the flustered dwarf even seemed to be confused about that. Finally, Brunner collected himself enough to lead Drizzt back to the mossy patch. The darkness enchantment was gone by then, revealing the pile of stones, a few of them scattered about on the moss. But no maps were to be seen, nor the pack Brunner had used to carry them.
"He put a damned darkness globe over me,"
Brunner grumbled, stamping his foot in outrage.
"Blinded me and hit me with..."
Drizzt leaned in, prompting the dwarf to explain in detail, but all Brunner could offer was,
"Bees."
"Bees?"
"Felt like bees," Brunner tried to explain. "Biting at me, stinging at me, something..."
He shook his hairy head and held forth one arm, and indeed, between his heavy bracer and short sleeve, his bare skin showed many small welts.
"Kept me back while he swooped through, taking me maps."
"You're sure it was a drow?"
"I seen him when I came out of the darkness," Brunner asserted.
"Where?"
Brunner led him to the spot and pointed to the ridge leading back to the dell, and Drizzt dropped to his knees examining the shrubs and the dirt. An expert tracker, Drizzt easily found the trail, surprisingly easily, given Brunner's description of the robber as a dark elf. He followed that trail into the dell, and there it got far more confusing, for any tracks or bent fronds had been muddled by the tumultuous traffic the low ground had seen, a dwarf running back and forth. Finally, though, Drizzt did rediscover the trail and found it to lead out to the northwest. He and Brunner ascended the ridge there, peering out.
"The road is that way," Drizzt remarked.
"Road?"
"The road to Port Last."
Brunner turned his eyes to the west more directly.
"Cat went that way. She might have found him."
Off they went, Drizzt easily following the trail, again, too easily. They had barely gone 100 yards when they heard a growl up ahead.
"Damned good cat!"
Brunner yelped and charged on, expecting to find Guinevere standing atop the thief. They did find Guinevere, standing in a small lee, her fur all rumpled, teeth bared, growling angrily.
"Well?"
the dwarf called out.
"Where in the nine hells?"
Drizzt put a hand on the dwarf's shoulder to silence him.
"The ground," he said softly, walking past the dwarf toward the cat.
"Eh?"
Brunner soon understood. Guinevere was standing in the grass, but the ground beneath the grass was not dark like soil, but white. The cat's muscles flexed, and she leaned to the side, trying to pull up her paw, but, alas, she was fully stuck in place.
"Like fly glue,"
Drizzt remarked, coming to the edge of the strange magical patch.
"Gwen?"
The panther growled unhappily in reply.
"He sticked her to the ground?"
Brunner asked, coming up to Drizzt's side.
"He catched your cat?"
Drizzt had no answer other than a concerned sigh. He took out the onyx figurine and bade the cat to be gone. She couldn't pace as she usually did when she was slipping from her corporeal form into the gray mist that ushered her to her home on the astral plane. But she did diminish to nothingness soon after, leaving Drizzt and Brunner standing in the lee.
"He got me maps, elf,"
the dejected dwarf remarked.
"We'll find him,"
Drizzt promised. He didn't tell his friend that the path the drow thief had left was too clear to miss, that it had to have been purposely left, but he decided not to. They were being led for a reason, and Drizzt was fairly confident of where they were being led and who was leading them. The drow flipped the satchel off his shoulder, dropping it on the table between himself and Jarlaxle.
"I think I got them all," he said.
"You're not sure?"
Athragate asked from the side of the room.
"We're talking important work here, and you think you got them?"
Jarlaxle flashed a disarming smile at the dwarf, then turned back to Valasune, one of his most experienced scouts. "I'm sure you liberated the important ones."
"Brunner was laying them out on the ground," Valas answered. "All of those are in there, and what the dwarf had not yet removed from the satchel. Perhaps he has other maps hidden elsewhere, I cannot be certain. Ain't ye a scout?"
"Forgive my friend," Jarlaxle remarked. "This mission has special importance to him."
"Since he is the one who freed the primordial, you mean,"
Valas said, offering a sly look at Athrogate. His words caught the dwarf by surprise, for who knew of that journey to Gauntlegrim those years before? But then again, Jarlaxle didn't seem the least bit surprised. Athrogate fixed a suspicious, you-told-them glare on Jarlaxle. "There is little that escapes the notice of Valas Hune, my friend," Jarlaxle explained to Athrogate. "Rest assured that he is among a very few who know of the disturbing events in Gauntlegrim."
"And why didn't he make sure he got all the damned maps?" "King Brunner is not alone," Valasune reminded. "I have little desire to try to explain my presence lurking about the camp to Drizzt D'Urden."
"He is a reasonable fellow," Jarlaxle said.
"'More than a few dead drow wouldn't agree with that assessment,' Valis replied. "'Besides, my friend, you know little of Drizzt of late. "'I have explored his exploits, and talked to those who have traveled beside him, "'and reasonable is not a word I often hear.'
Jarlaxle's eyebrows betrayed a bit of surprise at that, but he quickly dismissed the look. "'You could get to know him better, should you decide to accompany us to Gontalgrim,' he reminded the scout. Valis was shaking his head before Jarlaxle ever finished the thought.
"'A primordial?' he said. "'Perhaps we can instead travel to a different plane, to do battle with a true god, though I doubt we'd notice the difference in the few heartbeats of life we would have left.'
I have no intention of doing battle with the primordial.
I'd be more concerned with its intentions, were I you, which I am not, thankfully.
He motioned to the satchel.
There, you have your maps as you asked.
And you have your gold, well earned, Jarlaxle replied, tossing him a small bag.
There's more, said Valasune. For no extra cost, he added, seeing Jarlaxle's suspicious look.
They're on your trail?
If not, then Drizzt is not nearly the tracker you claim him to be.
And?
There is much stirring in the south. The Netherese all but wage war with the Thanes in Neverwinter Wood.
Yes, yes, over the Dread Ring.
And more than that, the folk of the land grow alert to the awakening of the primordial, if that is what is indeed happening.
Folk should be scared, Atheragate said. Ground's shaken.
Some welcome it, Valasune replied.
"'And some want to stop it,' said Jarlaxle, "'and those who would welcome it will no doubt try to stop those who mean to stop it.'
"'There is always that possibility,' said the scout. "'And to that point a band entered Luskan only hours before me. "'They came into the city in small groups, but my contacts at the gate assure me "'that they were of singular purpose and origin. "'They wore the clothes of ordinary merchants, but my contacts are quite perceptive, "'and more than one of these newcomers, I'm told, hid an identical burn scar, a brand, under a collar, cloak, or whatnot.'
"'Ashmedai,' Jarlaxle remarked.
"'No small number,' Valis confirmed. "'And there was a particular surface elf woman among them, stylish and alluring and carrying a metal walking stick.'
Jarlaxle nodded, his expression showing that Valis need not continue. It made sense, of course, that the Thanes would send an expedition their way. As far as they knew, Luskan was the entrance to Gontalgrim, and the likely starting point of any who would try to prevent the catastrophe that was no doubt well on its way. "'You have scouts in the city monitoring them?' Jarlaxle asked.
"'Some.'
"'The usual crew?' Valis nodded.
"'And they know to report directly to you through our friend at the Cutlass.'
"'You sound like you're leaving,' Atheragate remarked.
I am summoned to the Underdark, good dwarf. There are more troubles in the world than those before you.
Atheragate started to protest, but Jarlaxle stopped him short with an upraised hand. The simple truth of the matter was that Bregan d'Irth and Camoriel had lessened their presence in Luskan greatly in the last few years, and with good reason. With the fall of Neverwinter, Luskan had become far less profitable for the band, and indeed, while Jarlaxle had a vested personal interest in the endeavor, mostly out of spite against that witch Sylora Somme and her treachery. It was personal, not professional. A large part of the reason Jarlaxle had elevated Camuriel to a position nearly equal to his own was to allow them both to keep such things separate. Thus, Jarlaxle had hired Valasune and Gromph with his own funds, and had asked for no support from Camuriel and Bregan d'Irth. The Primordial, the Dread Ring, the skirmish between Thay and Netheril, none of that was of financial importance to Bregan d'Irth. And Bregan d'Irth remained, first and foremost, a for-profit enterprise. Jarlaxle tossed Valasune another small bag of gold, which obviously caught the scout off guard. He looked at Jarlaxle with undisguised curiosity. "'For the extra information,' Jarlaxle explained. "'And please do buy Camuriel the finest brandy, as repayment for him sparing his finest scout and thief.'
"'His,'
Valasune said with a sly grin. "'For the time being,' Jarlaxle replied. "'When I return to the Underdark and the matter of this new endeavor, I will reclaim that which is mine, including the services of Valasune.' The scout grinned and bowed.
"'I look forward to such a day, my friend,' he said, then was simply gone.
"'You think it's her?'
Atheragate asked Jarlaxle.
It would not surprise me, but of course I intend to find out, Jarl Axel promised.
Makes no sense, Elf, the dwarf replied.
Why would Dahlia walk into Luskan like that? It's been a decade.
To be sure.
But who'd forget that one, even after 10 years? She comes walking into the city in that hat and with that staff of hers? How would we not know?
Why would she think we're even still in the city? Jarl Axel countered. And truly, why would she care?
Wouldn't we be the ones your friend was speaking of? You know, them what's wanting to put the primordial back in its cage?
Perhaps, Jarl Axel said with a shrug, but he was already thinking along other lines. He had kept some tabs on Dahlia in the years since the eruption. He knew that she had been in Neverwinter Wood, serving Sylora and the creation of the Dread Ring, and harrying the Netherese. And he knew, simply from their encounter in Gauntlegrim, that such a station would not well suit the fiery and independent elf warrior. And there was the matter of her betrayal by Sylora in Gauntlegrim. Dahlia could easily enough have entered Luskan in disguise, of course. In fact, for her, just wearing ordinary clothing could be considered a substantial disguise. But if Dahlia had come to the city so brazenly, was it because she feared nothing Jarl Axel could throw against her? Or was it because she wanted Jarl Axel to find her? The drow nodded, trying to play out all the many possibilities, and reminding himself that two other important visitors would soon enough enter the city.
"Where are you going?"
Athrogate asked as Jarl Axel started for the door. "To speak with Valis Hune's contacts. And for yourself, the Cutlass. Send my love to Shivani Gardpeck. Let her know of potential visitors."
"Which?" Athrogate asked. "The cultists or Drizdan Brunner?"
Jarl Axel paused, mulled over the dwarf's words, and replied, "Yes."
"There are many people here," said Devand, the commander of the Ashmedai squad that traveled to Luskan with Dahlia.
"It is a city."
"I thought it would be more like Port Last. Is Luskan not a pirate outpost?"
"Luskan is far more than that," Dahlia replied. "At least it used to be."
And indeed the city was noticeably diminished since last she'd been there. The streets were filthy, and vacant houses, some partially burned, seemed to be squeezing out the habitable dwellings. More shops were closed than open, and more than one pair of cold, ill-intentioned eyes tracked them from the shadows of alleys and vacant lots. Dahlia turned her attention back to the cultists.
"A drow and a dwarf," she said. "We seek a drow and a dwarf. There are few dark elves in Luskan, certainly, and rest assured that any you find will know of the one we seek. Divide into small groups, 3 or 4 in each, and go out to the taverns and inns. There are many in Luskan, or there were, and those that remain should be easily found. Watch and listen. We will have a better understanding of the city in short order. And you," she said, aiming the remark directly at Devand, "gather your 3 best warriors. We will venture to the Undercity, the place Valindra once called home. There lie the tendrils of the fallen host tower of the Arcane that first guided me to Gauntlegrim and the Primordial, and there too lie the tunnels that will take us back to that place, should we need to give chase to our enemies."
"We should have brought Valindra,"
Devand remarked, but Dahlia shook her head.
"Sylora refused that request," she said, "and I'm glad she did. The Lich is not yet controllable or even predictable."
Devand gave a slight bow, lowering his eyes appropriately and letting the conversation go at that. The Ashmedai leader chose their companions well, and the skilled fighters didn't slow Dahlia as she eagerly descended through Ilusk and back to the bowels of Luskan. The Ashmedai scepters also contained a bit of magic in them that allowed them to glow like a low torch, and Devand's was even more powerfully enchanted, illuminating as fully as a powerful lantern. Between that and their brooches, they found little trouble with the numerous ghouls and other undead things of that haunted land. They came upon the former chambers of Valindra in short order. The place was exactly as Dahlia remembered, though more dusty. Otherwise, everything was the same, the furniture and old tomes, the various twisted and decorated candelabra. Everything, except that the other skull gem, Arklem Greeth's phylactery, was gone.
Dahlia mused over that for a bit, wondering if it was a sign that the powerful lich had at last escaped his imprisonment. Or perhaps Jarlaxle had departed the city, taking Greeth's prison with him. He wouldn't leave a treasure like that behind, after all. The elf did well to hide her disappointed sigh. She desperately hoped that Jarlaxle was still in Luskin.
"The tendrils!"
she heard Devand call from outside the chamber, and she moved out to find him and the other Ashmedai inspecting the ceilings, following the green roots of the fallen host tower.
"The tendrils!"
Devand announced again when she arrived, and she nodded. "Down there," she said, pointing to a tunnel that ran off to the southeast. "That is the route to Gontalgrim. You two," she said, pointing alternately to Devand and one other. "Follow that trail and see if it remains open."
"How far?"
Devand asked. "As far as you can. You remember the way back to the city?"
"Of course."
"Then go. As far as you may, for the rest of the day and night, search for signs of recent passage all along the way, a discarded water skin or the soot of a torch, footprints, anything." With a bow, the pair rushed off. Dahlia and the others returned to Luskin and the appointed rendezvous with the rest of the team, a shabby inn in the south end of the city, not far from Illusk. The smaller groups returned one by one, reporting on the progress of identifying the various inns and taverns scattered about the city. They were learning the ground as ordered, but none reported any sign of dark elves as yet. Dahlia took the news stoically, assuring them all that it was just a beginning and a solid foundation for their designs. "Learn the city," she bade them, "its ways and its denizens. Enlist the trust of some locals. You have coin. Let it flow freely to purchase drinks in exchange for information." Again, the elf secretly prayed that Jarlaxle had not left Luskin. She was a bit less composed when Devand returned before the next dawn, with news that the way to Gontalgrim was no more.
"The tunnels have collapsed and are impassable," he assured her.
"Take half the team with you after you've rested," Dahlia commanded. "Search every tunnel to its end."
"It's a maze down there," Devand protested, "and it's filled with ghouls."
"Every tunnel," Dahlia reiterated, her tone leaving no room for debate. "This was the way to Gontalgrim. If it is sealed from Luskin, then we can return to Sylora with our assurances that, from here at least, none will inhibit the awakening." Devand argued no more and departed to get some rest, leaving Dahlia alone in her small room at the inn. She paced about, moving to the one dirty window, and peered out over the city of sails.
"Where are you, Jarlaxle?"
she whispered. Chapter 16 A Drow and a Dwarf.
"Ye know it was him all along," Brunner concluded.
When it became obvious that Drizzt intended to follow the thief's trail all the way to the city of sails. "I knew it was a drow who raided our camp," Drizzt said.
"I tell ye that."
Drizzt nodded.
"I knew he wanted us to follow him. The trail he left was far too obvious."
"He was in a hurry," Brunner argued, but Drizzt shook his head. "Got to be him, then," the dwarf muttered.
And when Drizzt didn't reply, he added,
"Wantin' us to follow him, eh?"
He glanced over at Drizzt, who nodded.
"He won't be wantin' that when I find the rat,"
Brunner declared, and shook his fist in the air. Drizzt just smiled and turned his thoughts away as Brunner launched into a typical tirade, promising all sorts of pain upon the thief for stealing his treasured maps. And Drizzt was certain the thief was Jarlaxle, or someone working for him. Jarlaxle, above all others, knew of Brunner's passion for Gontalgrim, and whoever had raided the camp had come specifically for those maps, had waited until the exact moment when they were most vulnerable. But why? Why would Jarlaxle reach out to them in such a manner? Drizzt considered the mountains towering over them to the north, and expected that they would make Luskin the next day, probably before the midday meal. They camped that night by the side of the road, their rest undisturbed until very early in the morning, when the ground began to tremble and shake.
"The way is blocked,"
a voice said from the side. And Dahlia spun, surprised indeed.
"Jarlaxle,"
she mouthed, though she couldn't really see the drow in the shadows of an alley.
Your scouts tell you truthfully. The way to Gontalgrim is no more, from crumbling Luskan at least.
Dahlia moved slowly, trying to gain a view of the dark elf. It was indeed Jarlaxle's voice, melodic and harmonious, as would be expected of an elf, particularly a cultured dark elf. But the truth of it was that Dahlia only guessed it was he. She hadn't heard Jarlaxle's voice in a decade, and even then.
"I know you," the voice said. "I know your heart. I trust you will find a proper use for this when the opportunity presents itself."
"What do you mean?" the elf asked.
And when no reply came forth, even after she asked again, Dahlia rushed down the alley to the spot where she estimated the drow had been standing. On an empty, overturned cask, she found a cloth, and on the cloth a small box, and in the small box, a glass ring. She closed the box and wrapped it in the cloth before stuffing it into a pouch, and all the while she glanced up and down the alley, surveyed the roofline, searching for some clue, any clue.
"Jarlaxle?" she whispered again.
But it occurred to Dahlia then just how ridiculous her hopes truly were, just how much she had allowed herself to fantasize about something so very unlikely. She rushed out of the alley and down the garbage-strewn street toward the inn and her room, thinking then that her encounter had more likely been with an agent of Sylora. For the Thayan sorceress would ever test her, and never trust her, and woe to Dahlia if ever Sylora found her loyalty to be less than absolute. No matter how many times they approached Luskan from that direction, Drizzt and Brunner always paused on the same hill, south of the city's southern gate, to take in the view of the harbor. Though other ports like Waterdeep and Callanport had far larger docks, longer wharves, and always had more ships in port, nowhere was there to be found such a diversity of sailing vessels as in the so-called City of Sails. They might have been the dregs of the Sword Coast, pirates, smugglers, and only the most daring merchants, ruffians who outfitted their vessels ad hoc, with sails of stitched clothing, and maybe a catapult that had been designed for a castle's tower strapped onto the aft deck for good measure. Coast runners bobbed against the shallower docks, with rows of oars standing skyward. Single-mast schooners and square-sailed caravels dominated the second tier of docks, with many more open-moored farther out, and a trio of three-mast vessels, large and wide, were moored near the outermost docks. The City of Sails indeed, though Drizzt couldn't help but note that though those ships were in port, there were fewer in all than he remembered.
"Our friend better be here," Brunner grumbled, stealing the moment, "and better have me maps, every one, and don't ye think I'll not know if even one's missin'."
"We'll know soon enough," Drizzt promised.
"We'll know now," Brunner growled in reply.
"Jarlaxle, tomorrow," Drizzt promised, and started down the road toward the city. "The hour is late. Let us find an inn for the night and shake off the dirt of the road." Brunner started to argue, but stopped short and shot Drizzt a glance and a grin.
"The cutlass?"
the dwarf said, almost reverently, for what a grand history those two, particularly Drizzt, had with that establishment. It was in the Cutlass where Drizzt and Wulfgar had first met Captain Dudermont of Seasprite, one of the most legendary vessels ever to sail out of Luskan. The Cutlass was where a broken Wulfgar had gone when, returned from the abyss, he found himself mired in the mud of self-pity and strong drink. Delly Curti, for a while Wulfgar's wife, and thus Brunner's daughter-in-law, had been a barmaid there, working for the jovial and well-informed
"Aram Gardpeck,"
Brunner said, recalling the tavern-keeper's name. "A good man with a fine tavern," Drizzt agreed. "Aye, when the wealthy came to Luskan in the years before the pirates took hold, they stayed in the far fancier inns higher on the hills. But they would have found better lodging in Aram Gardpeck's beds."
"Not to doubt," said Brunner. "And who was that skinny one with the rat face? The one what stole me boy's hammer?"
Drizzt could easily picture that miscreant sitting on a stool at Aram's bar. He was always there, always talking, and he had an unusual name, Drizzt remembered,
a silly one. But the drow couldn't quite recall it, so he just shook his head.
Aram's kin still got the place, or so I hear, Brunner recalled. What was that girl's name, then? Shivani?
Drizzt nodded. Shivani Gardpeck. Claims to be Aram's great-great-great-grandniece, I believe.
Think it's true?
Drizzt shrugged. All that mattered to him was that the cutlass remained. Shivani may or may not have been Aram Gardpeck's descendant, but if she wasn't, she had to have come from a similar bloodline, and if she was, then Fat Aram would be glad to know it, and to know her. The pair crossed through the open gate, many eyes turning their way. There were only a scant few guards manning the walls, and none visible on the towers. They might have been soldiers of one or another of the high captains who ruled Luskin, but looked more like thugs serving themselves first, a ragtag band of knaves bound by no uniform, no code, and no notion of the common good of Luskin. The city gates were always open. If Luskin began discriminating about who they let in, they would probably find the city deserted in short order. Even the scurvy dogs who wandered in through the gates paled under the glow of angelic halos compared to the rats who crawled off the ships that put into port there.
"Here now, a dwarf and a drow,"
one man said to the pair as they passed under the gate.
"Be ye more impressed by your eyes, or by your sharp mind that sorted such a sight?" Brunner shot back.
"Not a usual pairing is all," the man said with a chuckle. "Give him that much, Brunner," Drizzt said, so only the dwarf could hear.
"And what is the news in Luskin, good sir?" Drizzt asked the man.
"Same news as any day," the guard replied, and he seemed in good spirits.
He stood and stretched, his back making cracking sounds with the effort, and took a step toward the pair.
"Too many bodies clogging the waterways, and too many rats blocking the streets."
"And pray tell, what captain do you serve?" asked the drow. The man looked wounded, and put his hand over his heart.
"My dark skin," he replied. "I'm living to serve the city of sails and nothing more."
Brunner shot Drizzt a sour look, but the drow, far better versed in the ways of the chaotic and wild town, smiled and nodded, for he had expected no other answer.
"And where are ye off to?" the guard asked. "Might I be directing ye? Ye looking for a boat? Or an inn in particular?" "No,"
Brunner said flatly, aiming it, obviously, at both questions. But to the dwarf's wide-eyed surprise, Drizzt answered, "Passing through. For tonight, good lodging. For tomorrow, perhaps the road north." He saluted and started away, then said to Brunner, and not quietly,
"Come, Shivani awaits."
"Ah," the guard said, turning them both back to regard him. "Good ale to be found in Luskin, to be sure. Boatload of Baldur's Gate pale brew come through just 2 days ago."
"To be sure," Drizzt answered, and he led Brunner away.
"When do ye get a wagon, tongue elf?"
Drizzt shrugged, as if he didn't understand.
"He might have knowed the name."
Again, Drizzt shrugged. "If Jarl Axel wishes to find us, why would we make it difficult for him?"
"And if he ain't looking for us?"
"Then we would never have known it was a drow that raided our camp, and would never have found a trail so obvious leading us here."
"Or the trail's a fake, leading us here so we're just thinking it's Jarl Axel."
Brunner nodded repeatedly as he considered his own words, as if he had just had a moment of epiphany.
"In that case, too, I would speak with Jarl Axel, for any so sending us in this direction surely concerns him as well. And a fine ally he will make in that case."
"Bah!"
Brunner snorted. "We have no enemies here that I know of," the drow said. "We walked in openly, with nothing to hide and no ill intent."
"Now you're friends to the high captains, are ye?"
"Assuming there are any left, I'd kill every one of them if the opportunity presented itself. Any way resemble those who defeated Captain Durdermont decades ago," Drizzt admitted.
"I'm sure they'd be glad to hear that."
"I don't intend to tell them."
"A dwarf and a drow, just like he asked," the guard said to the alluring woman who had hired him to watch for that very thing.
The woman, an Ashmedai serving in Dahlia's band, nodded.
This very day?
Not an hour passed.
You are certain?
A dwarf and a drow, the guard deadpanned, for how could anyone get something like that wrong? The woman licked her lips and pulled out a small purse. She turned as she opened it, shielding its contents from the guard's eye, then turned back to toss him two pieces of gold.
Which way did they go?
The guard shrugged. Didn't bother to watch them. The Ashmedai sighed and gave a little growl of frustration. With a disgusted look and a shake of her head, she started away.
Why would I, when I know right where they're going?
The ruffian asked. The woman spun, hands on hips, glowering at the grinning man. She waited a few heartbeats, but he said nothing.
Well?
She prompted.
Ye paid me to watch the gate for a dwarf and a drow. I watched the gate and saw your dwarf and drow.
She narrowed her eyes threateningly, but the guard appeared unconcerned. With another sigh, the woman grabbed up her purse.
One piece of gold for the name of who they're going to see, the guard said, grinning all the wider. Two will get you the name of the place, three how to get there.
She tossed two gold coins at his feet.
All of it, she said.
The guard considered the coins, shrugged, and accepted the bargain.
The skinny one, Brunner prompted,
leaning on the bar, his gray and orange beard lathered with foam. Shivani Gardpeck stood opposite him with one hand on her hip and the other tapping at her chin. She was an attractive woman, nearing 40, full-bodied with considerable curves and long dark brown hair that bunched thickly at her shoulders. She didn't remind Drizzt of her distant uncle, Aram, in her appearance, but her mannerisms bespoke a family resemblance.
A long way removed was Aram, she mumbled.
A long time ago, Brunner agreed, but the tales came down through your family.
To be sure.
The tale of Wulfgar's stolen hammer.
Shivani nodded and chewed her bottom lip, as if the forgotten name was right there, begging release.
Ah, by the beards of gnomes,
Brunner lamented when the woman held up her hands in defeat. He lifted his flagon and drained it, belched for good measure, and nodded to Drizzt that he was ready to go to their room. Halfway up the stairs, the pair were stopped by Shivani's call.
I'll remember it, don't you doubt, she said. Rat-faced man with a hammer that weren't his own,
Brunner called back, a light tone in his voice, as if the conversation had brought him back across the decades to a place he far preferred. Indeed, his voice was filled with relief, and he grinned widely and threw up his hands as if all the world had been made right. 2 hours later, Brunner was deeply sunk into a chair and snoring loudly. Drizzt contemplated whether or not he should disturb his friend, but he knew that if he let Brunner sleep, the dwarf would likely awaken him in the middle of the night, grumping about a grumbling belly. Brunner stopped his snoring with a grunt and a chortle, and opened one lazy eye to regard the dark-skinned hand touching his shoulder.
It's time for evenfeast, Drizzt said, quietly but forcefully, for it appeared to him that Brunner was about to bite his hand.
The dwarf shrugged him away and closed his eyes again, smacking his lips as he settled down deeper into the chair. Drizzt considered the slight for just a moment, then walked around to the other side of the chair, bent low, and whispered into the dwarf's ear,
"Orcs."
Brunner's eyes opened wide, and he hopped from his chair in a great explosion of movement, lifting right into the air before landing in a ready, fighting crouch.
"Where? What?"
"Forks," Drizzt said. "It has been a long time since you've used one."
Brunner glowered at him.
"Evenfeast?"
Drizzt suggested, motioning toward the door.
"Bah, but our talk earlier put some old thoughts in me mind, elf. Thoughts what turned to dreams, and ye stole 'em."
"Memories of Wulfgar?"
"Aye, me boy and me girl."
Drizzt nodded, knowing full well the comfort such dreams could impart. He offered his friend a sympathetic smile and bowed in apology.
"Had I known, I would have gone for my meal without you."
Brunner waved that away with one hand and rubbed his grumbling belly with the other. He grabbed up his one-horned helm and plopped it on his head, slung his shield over his shoulder, and took up his axe.
"Don't need no damned fork," he said.
showing Drizzt his axe.
"And if it is an orc, we'll chop it up to bite-sized pieces, don't ye doubt."
Something struck Drizzt as odd by the time he and Brunner were only halfway down the stairs to the common room. Shivani wasn't behind the bar, which was unusual, though hardly suspicious. But it was more than that, something he couldn't quite sort out. They continued.